With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello there, movie truthers. It's Michael Leader here with the third dispatch from the International Film Festival here in Rotterdam, broadcasting out of Podcast Corner near the bar and coffee point here in the Doelen. So excuse any hubbub in the background. But today I'm sitting with Anna Lazic.
Hello.
And David Jenkins.
Hey.
How are we doing, gang?
Not bad. Great.
Yeah, no, Still feeling fresh?
Keeping the flame alive, you know, like it's cold outside, but staying warm in the cinemas.
So this will be our final dispatch from the festival.
Indeed.
So it's an opportunity for us to reflect, pick up some highlights. David, do you have anything that comes to mind?
I've had a fun, just in general, I've had a super fun time here. I mean, I think that there's so much going on at any one time that you can kind of, you know, it's that kind of theme park vibe where you kind of, you know, you've got limited time and you've got to really give it over to the things that you want to do. And I was really pleased to catch up with a film that played in Cannes last year called Liberté by this Spanish director Albert Serra, who, you know, if anyone has ever seen him IRL, he's quite a character. He's this kind of Spanish dandy and cinephile who is he talks a lot, and he came yesterday to do an intro to the film, and you kind of felt, wow, he could be talking here forever if there wasn't a kind of shepherd's crook dragging him off. And his film it's a kind of a dirge is probably the word to use, but I don't necessarily mean that in a negative way. It's one night in a forest lit by the moonlight as various 18th century French nobility and courtesans are basically dogging in the moonlight.
I don't remember that top loader song.
Yeah, dogging in the moonlight. It's people looking at each other and like this sort of sexual interplay that's happening, and this people getting ready to sort of release these very extreme pent up desires in various extreme ways. I used the word extreme twice there, and I think it's definitely relevant for this film. But it's got this really hypnotic quality to it, and it's a mood and an atmosphere, and there is a sort of vague storyline and intrigue happening in the background, but it's never really that more important than actually just watching these kind of quite sort of conventionally ugly bodies, I would say. Like certainly the men have I think sort of self-consciously, you know, paunchy and ugly and like, you know, playing with their bits and bits and pieces for a long time. I mean, there's lots and lots of shots of guys stood there with a kind of slightly pained expression and rubbing their groin, like looking at something, and it's
okay.
You know, I think there's lots to be said and written about this movie, but I believe it's going to be coming out in London in May. So
terrific.
Londoners listening will get a chance to experience it and you know, potentially walk out of it, because mm-hmm. it's a walking out kind of movie.
That's Liberté.
Yes.
A sort of recommendation there from David.
Oh no, I would say a film you definitely got to, you know. I was thinking while watching it would be an amazing installation, multi-camera installation piece where you could kind of stand in the middle and have all these people around you like looking at you as you're sort of stood in the gallery and they're kind of rubbing their bits.
Okay.
And you can choose which kind of escapade you want to watch.
Choose your own adventure.
Yes, it's a choose your own sexual adventure.
Oh, terrific. Yeah. Eleanor, what highlights have you seen?
A film that I really, really loved that I saw yesterday is called Los Fantasmas by Sebastian Loyo, I'm not sure. It's from Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is that apparently there is no film industry in Guatemala, and the director is from Guatemala, but he studied in London at the London Film School, and like the film is made by all these people that he like, either they're just friends or they're people that are also directors also at the London Film School that he met, and they all made this movie sort of together. And it's what I really, really liked about it is that it's just so atmospheric, cinematic, and like just the filmmaking of it is so brilliant, because there are so many things, like a shot, for example, a long still shot on the landscape of the city in Guatemala, and like that's such a template of like art house movies, especially like South American art house movies, but then he will just pan out and show something else, and it just feels like such a smart way of like undermining all our expectations and things, and just on a purely like visual cinematic level. The sound design is also really good, but like I just mean formally it's like so thrilling. And at the end of the film, he came to like do the Q&A, and he said the film is about this and this, and I was like, yes, it is about this, but like that's not what I was thinking about. I wasn't like, oh, this film is about this and like about these like big ideas. I was like, it didn't really matter to me what a big film of the film was, because I was like just so attached to like those characters. And there's a really interesting play with perspectives throughout the film, like we're with this main guy who's like this really, really beautiful man, which certainly helps. And then he meets some people and we stay with them for a bit, and it sort of, you know, circles through all these characters. And so it's just a constantly interesting film that they're always doing something new. And at the end, I don't know if it, to me, it didn't really add up to something like really meaningful by big ideas, but it didn't matter. It was more like real life, or like you just enjoy being in it and watching it and living it. And it was so thrilling.
Oh,
it
wow.
was just brilliant.
And that title again, Los Fantasmas.
Los Fantasmas, from Guatemala.
Wow.
Hopefully it's at festivals somewhere. I think it should be, because it's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, fantastic. I'm going to mention a film we did talk about on the previous episode, which is Betty Gordon's Variety. A real treat of coming to film festivals. I know that it seems that you come to film festivals to see new films, but I love going and seeing a rep screening.
Mm.
And I'd heard good things about Variety, and it completely exceeded all expectations. This film about a young woman in the early 80s, I mean, it was filmed in the early 80s in New York, who takes up a job as a ticket seller in an adult movie theater just off Times Square. And she develops a relationship with one of the punters there that becomes this almost exploration of desire and identity and sort of subversions of themes from film noir, as she starts to follow this man who may be linked to the mob, whilst also developing her own new identity and persona as an amateur detective or something like that. Really fascinating film, and I love how films of that period in New York become almost documentaries of what a pre-gentrification New York looked like. It's such a time capsule of a scene. The score in particular is by John Lurie, who pops up in all sorts of Jim Jarmusch films, but I love his jazz man guys as the frontman of the Lounge Lizards. His saxophone playing is just like no other, sort of scuzzy noirish jazz, and it's just brilliant. I'd love to watch it in a double bill with Jane Campion's In the Cut, which has a similar sort of psychosexual, the danger of desire sort of theme running through it, women sort of almost confronting their desire whilst also following dangerous men. Yeah, absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it was so nice.
It's also about like women confronting the desire of men.
Yes.
Which I really like, because usually you're like in a movie, you're mostly like, oh, the guy desires the woman and she's just there.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's like she's aware that she's being desired by this man, and she's confronting that, and she's interested in that, but she's also having her own agency. She's not just like a victim of it, you know, she's like, she has some agency over this. And I really like that, this like sort of awareness of the character. It's brilliant.
And it has some absolutely wonderful off the wall scenes where she has a relatively white bread sort of on off boyfriend comes back now and then, and she starts to really make him feel uncomfortable in scenes that sort of break the realism of the film, where she goes into long monologues, like explicit sexual tales, and you just watch him squirm. And it is about female desire on screen, and it's quite a great film. And we saw it Saturday night in the Cinerama, which is a beautiful old cinema here in Rotterdam. That's but a nice sort of scuzzy venue to see it in.
Yeah, totally. And I love the casting of Sarah McLeod as the main protagonist in the film, because she's, as you say, she's got this really very kind of innocent vibe to her. Like, you know, she they've kind of cast someone who doesn't necessarily look like she'd be the person who would accept a job in a porn cinema. But it's kind of like emphasize this idea of like necessity and her having to take this job and accept the reality of her situation, and it kind of makes her transformation feel more interesting and more subversive at the same time.
I really like that there's a lot of conversations between women, and she talks about working that movie theater, and they're all like, it's a job, you have to do the job. But whenever she tells a man, they're very shocked and they're disgusted by it. They're like, why would you do that? You could do anything else. And all the women are like, well, yeah, you have to, like, you know, make some money. And they're all really understanding. It's really great.
And you get to see a young Luis Guzman.
He's amazing. It must be one of his first roles,
right? Yeah.
Long before his films in the 90s, Boogie Nights, etc.
Yeah.
He's fantastic as the porter at the cinema. He's
Jose.
Yeah, fantastic. Anyway, that's Variety, another strong recommendation. So this is our last dispatch. We're all going to be shipping back to the UK pretty soon. But the festival does go on until the 2nd of February. And there are, as we've said before, dozens of films showing at any one time. So are there any films from the back half of this programme that we are either sorry we've missed or we'd recommend people check out, David?
I guess one film that I'd be quite, had my schedule allowed it, I would have been quite keen to see a film called Special Actors by the director Shinichiro Ueda, who recently delighted me with his film One Cut of the Dead.
Oh, amazing!
Which was a kind of something I came to very late after seeing it kind of praised highly by lots of people who saw it in the UK across quite a long period of time, this film looks like a sort of similar setup of, you know, a similar idea of like deconstructing the idea of filmmaking and acting and performance and doing it in a kind of like comic tone, but with that intellectual undertow to it. I'm just gutted that I'm not going to be able to see that one this time, but you know, it's going on the list.
He absolutely is a director that I'll see anything he makes next, because One Cut of the Dead was one of the most surprising and delightful films of the last handful of years.
I think so many people I've talked to about that film have like not watched it because they're like, oh, it's just a zombie film, I don't want to watch a zombie film, like low budget zombie film, and you've got to try and like grab them by the lapels and shake them and say like, it's not a zombie film. But even if it was, you should watch it.
Yeah. The film I'm sad to miss, to stay with Japanese cinema, is a new film by Nobuhiko Obayashi, who listeners may know, he in the 70s made an absolutely brilliant pseudo-horror film in Japan called Houseu. And he's still kicking, he's still going, and he's made a 3-hour long movie called Labyrinth of Cinema. Let me quote from the program here. It's in which a cinema becomes a time machine and transports young people to several crucial moments in Japanese history, and it is apparently a very colourful, wacky, off-the-wall film. And
oh, wow.
That would be the sort of thing, spending 3 hours with that, I'd love to do. Eleanor, anything you'd recommend or sorry to miss?
Well, actually, I'm not going to miss it, but I really want to talk about it because it sounds brilliant, so I'm going to see that later today, so there won't be a dispatch about it. It's a movie from Belgium called Moidhond, which sounds really interesting because it's centered on a young man who is just out of prison because he's a pedophile. And the whole movie is about, I haven't seen it yet, I'm really excited. It won the Audience Award at the Gen Film Festival, And the whole movie is about this guy he's not a bad person. He just has these impulses and these desires that he is disgusted by, and he wants to get over them. And I just love the idea of like a movie about this from the perspective of someone who's like that. There was this movie called The Woodsman that was starring
Kevin Bacon.
But that was quite like Sundance indie, like quite not very well done, but this sounds like it's actually quite psychologically complex, and the filmmaking is apparently quite clean and lovely. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, plenty to work on there. So I suppose in a fitting way to wrap up these dispatches, we've got some special time with the director of the festival, Bero Beyer. David, could you set up this interview, who Bero is and why we should be excited to hear from him?
Bero is the artistic director of the festival, has been for a couple of years now, and he seems to have transformed it or sort of taken the festival and sort of tried to mould it a little. He's streamlined all the various strands within the festival. I mean, one of the interesting things about Rotterdam, which I love, is that you have these various strands in the festival. You have like deep focus and bright future and the
perspectives and voices.
Tiger Burns.
And each within each one, there's like a little. There are little kind of subcategories. But one of the things that's great about this festival is that there's no like hierarchy to them. There's mm-hmm. no like this is the main one that you should be focusing on, and this is the sort of slightly smaller one that you maybe shouldn't be that interested in. And all four of them have like equal billing. There's no like, you know, there's no kind of we're going to lift the competition up and make that, you know, put all our focus on that and sort of program it so like you should be watching these films.
Or films where are there galas or special exactly. presentations. Interesting. Yes.
It's like, yeah, there's a real sense of like everything is equal in this festival. Like no films are prized above others in terms of like having big, you know, a big glitzy treatment. You know, and it just means like, I mean, one of the things that's amazing about this festival is like, you know, you go to a film like Liberté where you kind of think, you know, when it gets a release, it's going to probably struggle to get people through the door on such a premise, and you know the fact that it's like over 2 hours. But yeah, I mean, you know, this was I saw it in a 500 seat cinema, packed to the brim. Mm-hmm. You know, very very few walkouts that I saw, and you know people stayed right to the end and applauded and engaged with the director when he came on with the Q&A, and just feels like the audiences are really like up for it here, you know. And I think it's because like the program makes it easy for them to like to discover stuff and take a gamble on things. So yeah, this is Bero Beyer.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, I'm here with Bero Beyer, outgoing festival director of the International Film Festival Rotterdam. Sorry to have to put it so bluntly. You don't mind.
I'm still ongoing. Man. I'm going like crazy every day. From early morning, the 9 o'clock screenings, till midnight, and then in the wee hours when the filmmakers come together and discuss amongst themselves with the audience what they have just seen and mm-hmm. blew their minds or inspired them or made them angry. I might be outgoing, but I'm still enjoying every last frame and every last meeting of this festival.
Well, I've just caught you as you've just come out of doing an intro to a film.
Yes.
Which sounds fascinating, and it's the Ordinary Heroes program that's been introduced.
Yes, this was a program we kept to the last of our perspectives program, where we wanted to do thematic programs. We have one on collectives, for instance, but this one, it's about Hong Kong. and filmmakers, literally the two directors, James Long and Lin Lin, that just stepped off the plane, are still working on this ongoing documentary because they're literally filming and trying to express through cinema what it's like to be in Hong Kong at the moment. You know, the supposed apolitical state, as the British put it, it's just economy. Well, recent events have shown it's quite the opposite. And filmmakers, not just now, but also in the past, have been finding forms to express that. So to be able to screen huge films like Uncut Gems or, you know, The Lighthouse and films like that, it's all nice. But to be able to raise attention for a program like that and have full houses gives huge energy.
Do you think there is a kind of strategy in your programming where you're almost using these bigger films as Trojan horses for the smaller ones?
No. I don't. I really resent that idea. I resent it to say, here's something you'll like because it's easy, now eat your vegetables. That's not how the Rotterdam audiences work. No, if we show a great film or something that's been huge already, like Parasite, it's because we believe whatever the director or directors are doing is relevant to the core of what the festival stands for in terms of expression or freedom of expression, of looking at film as art first, having something that engages the audience, and something that with a bit of relevance also to what it means to be a human being, whether you're in Rotterdam or in Angola or Philippines or Mexico.
Well, one of the things, that was a provocation, by the way, because I want to say that one of the things that I really think is great about this festival, and we have already talked about in our podcast, is this idea that the strand structure that you've developed in your tenure here is a great leveler. It's a way to that it puts all the films on and all the strands on equal pegging. So
yes,
it really, like, there's a feeling, unlike in some other festivals where you have certain tiers of like importance, this is unique. It feels unique in that everything has its own place and it's given the same focus and relevance.
Well, thank you. That makes me very happy. We put a lot of effort in making sure of all the 573 films that we show, that each and every one deserves the spotlight, the attention, the right context, and the right audience, whoever that may be. Sure, we have a competition, and that's like a main thing of the festival, but it doesn't matter whether you're in Bright Future for, let's say, more avant-garde discovery films, or you're in Deep Focus for more cinephile films. Each and every film has its own impact and should have its own impact. We're kind of egalitarian in that way, and we try to make this work throughout the festival, also that if you hang out in the bar and you speak to the director, that's on the same level field. You can just say, I loved your film, or just, could you please explain to me what the F you were actually trying to do? And both are fine, and the filmmakers know this, and they respect this as a way of, I don't know, celebrating cinema for what it's supposed to be, rather than be, I don't know, glossied up and packaged and sold as a product.
And also, one of the things that Rotterdam has always been famous for, and that you have enhanced further since you've been here, is the idea of like the diversity in the programming as well. Like, Rotterdam has always been known for being very open when it comes to like bringing the world together, almost. And was it an easy task for you to do that?
No, because it's always been the core of the festival. See, we have this tiny little fund called the Hubert Bals Fund, named after a founder. Basically, we ask rich people, we beg for money, and then we give it to what used to be called the Third World. But it's our excuse to be in touch with filmmakers from places where there's no other infrastructure for films. It's what we do. It's sort of the core of what we do. So the recent developments that have brought more attention to the need for diversity, the need for multiple voices and perspectives, you know, finally, everybody's caught on. This is what we think is totally relevant. We did this amazing thing just now in the new institute, where there is a huge installation by the Uma Groma collective that brought something to us that we think is natural to include in a film festival. It's a huge arty exposition about the spirituality that connects free black children, but it's a logical place within the festival. And to say, well, okay, let's file out some boxes and count people and see how our percentage of division is. We don't do that. To be honest, that quota thinking goes against the grain. I don't want to have to ask a filmmaker, okay, now fill in this sheet. What do you feel like? What is your minority? What is your sexuality? How do you identify yourself? You made a film. We'll show the film. And by going back to the same core that the festival stood for always, maybe amplified a little bit, that becomes the wealth of cinema as it is there also, next to, you know, whatever serialized popcorn content we get fed on other platforms.
Can I ask you a question? Could you send your mind back, and do you remember the first Rotterdam you ever attended?
That I first attended?
Yeah.
I was still in art school back then, here in Rotterdam actually, trying to become a visual artist. Didn't turn out that well. Learned how to produce, though. Well, that's something else. The energy. There was an energy to it. In the Hilton, where we do our talks and masterclasses now, that used to be the main office of the festival. And I was working as a volunteer driving cars.
Ah.
But that's not important what I was doing.
Who did you drive?
Well, you know, filmmakers, struggling filmmakers. The only star I ever had in the car was starring in a film called Heavenly Creatures by Peter Jackson, which was Kate Winslet.
Ah, very nice.
Slept all the way. We didn't have a conversation. She was dead tired. But amazing film, by the way. I really liked Heavenly Creatures. But the energy in the room was tangible. There was something of a creative energy that is hard to describe unless you're actually here, which is very, very different from any other festival I've attended, and I've been to quite a few by now. But it sort of gives you the spark to say, can I just be part of this? Can I help somehow? Can I tell my friends? A couple of years later, I tried to learn how to make films myself, turn into a producer, and now I'm here.
And now, and then you're kind of going back to that, I understand.
Yes, that's true.
When the festival is over, you have a month, and then...
I don't have a month.
I'm sorry.
I wish I had a month. No, well, there's one element of the festival experience for me personally. This is a personal question. It's usually the end work.
Yeah.
The films are there. We get to see working versions, and it's either good or we don't like it, and we select it or not. But that's sort of the end of often a year-long process. So those elements of the pro section, where we discuss project and development, I really feel akin to that. Having been a producer, I like the process just as much. When things are just an idea, when sparks are still being discussed, and it can still be anything, a total failure or a massive beautiful film. And I guess going to the film fund, I can put my money where my mouth is and relate to that element of film.
So you've written and you've produced. Do you think you'll ever direct?
No. No. You should see my graduation film from art school. Boy, do not direct. But it doesn't matter. You know, a filmmaker or producer or a collective or how you work. We've been too focused on the one person maybe sometimes. I mean, if a singular visual artist has one single idea that can be beautiful, but it's almost always a collective process. And if there's a person in the back that you don't want to see later on, that's fine. But I love that element of being, you know, at the infrastructure of making something happen, taking all the blame when things go wrong, and, you know, just be smiling smugly in the back when things go right.
So my last question to you is, like, a lot of our listeners are, they're really creative people.
Yes.
They want to make movies and they want to be part of the film festival world. A lot of them probably would be keen on programming films as well, and being involved in festivals like Rotterdam, maybe even one day. Could you, with your infinite wisdom, give our listeners a pearl from your time as the festival director here?
Well, I have even better news than that, because we don't just spend attention as a festival towards the filmmaker or the producer struggling to make films. We think the appreciation of cinema involves many more facets, including critics. We have a program for many years now called the Young Critics Program, where people actually from all over the world come here and start to learn what it's like to be a critic. Well, first of all, you will never get paid, but still, you learn about cinema. Some of those people are actually programming for our festival right now. Yevgeny used to be a young critic.
Wow.
Kiva Riordan, who is now running the Toronto section of World Cinema, has been a young critic. And this year, we started with something which is specifically for young curators, not just... In two ways, by the way, we said, let's make one theme program and let's just get an outside young curator, go wild, just do whatever you want to do. You can fail, doesn't matter, here's some money, we'll try to make it work for you, boom, it's there, sacred beings. But we also, on top of that, wanted to make use of all the people that are here that are usually very sharing with their experiences. So we devised a program called Sessions. Every morning there's like workshops and a select group of like 20, 25 people speaking about the value and the need of curation and how to go about making sense of this ocean of misery that at a certain point becomes beautiful when it's here. Because all those elements matter. If you're focused on, I want to be the visual artist or the director, whatever route you take can help you. Just watch films, experience the art, meet people, and sooner or later, you might be running the greatest film festival in the world.
Thank you so much for your time, Barrow, and congratulations on 5 glorious years.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that was David talking with Barrow Bayer, the director of the festival, the architect of the structure of the programme. But David, this is his final year, isn't it? So he's going to be replaced next year.
Yes, and so here's the outgoing one and the new one. Vanya Kalajecic is going to be coming next year. She's already sort of doing the rounds here this year, meeting people and sort of seeing, you know, getting a sense of the festival. And I think she's taking over something that's in good shape. So. Mm-hmm. I think it's always fun to be making something great even better. So yeah. Hopefully that's going to be a fun task for her. And like, you know, it feels like the kind of festival that is willing to take risks mm-hmm. and do interesting things and give artistic directors a sense of, a bit of extra control when it comes to like doing the things they want and moving it in certain directions. So hopefully that'll be the case for her as well.
Terrific. And this has been International Film Festival Rotterdam for us.
Yep. Yeah,
it's been great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
it's been an absolute pleasure broadcasting here. Listeners, I hope you've been enjoying the episode as well. Eleanor, David, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
I'm Michael Leader, and as always, this has been a 7 Digital production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.